And on the line from Crook in County Durham, we've got Chris Clark. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Ron.
Now, you're now running Armchair Detective. You're a retired police officer from Norfolk Constabulary. Round about 20 years since you retired, Chris, isn't it?
24 so far.
24, right, okay. So you're an author and you're writing crime stories, true crime stories, about crimes that happened in the past. So who or what is it you want to talk about today?
Just mention two books so far published. The first one was Yorkshire Ripper, The Secret Murders, which was published in June 2015. Where I make a case of 23 additional murders that Peter Sutcliffe committed around the United Kingdom. And then in August 1917, co-authored with Robert Giles from Northern Ireland, I had published The Face of Evil, the true story of Robert Black, the serial child killer. And this morning I would like to talk about Robert Black's early years, which are extracted from the book. Robert Black was born on the 21st of April 1947 to Jesse Hunter Black, an unmarried 24-year-old factory worker. And he was christened Robert, and Jesse lived in the nearby Grangemouth docks area in Scotland, and she was the daughter of a railway worker. At 6 months old, with no commitments on relationship, Jesse gave Robert Black up for fostering to Jack and Margaret Tulip, who lived in the Highland village of Kinloch Leven in Argyllshire on the eastern edge of Loch Leven. From an early age, he displayed signs of both antisocial behaviour and aggressive temper, particularly towards other younger children. And when he was age five, Jack Tulip died, and he was the closest thing Robert Black had ever had to a father figure. When he was old enough, he started attending the primary school in Kinloch Leven, and the other primary school children taunted the young boy Black, Smelly Robert Tulip, which was a description which would follow Robert Black well into his adult working life. Where he was generally regarded by those that knew him either through work or social activities as having a very strong body odour problem. And he was generally dressed rough and scruffy appearance. At the age of five, he and a little girl who lived locally compared their genitalia. And whilst this can be looked on as a doctor and nurse's sort of episode, it was quite apparent that to Robert Black, it was more than that, and he began to display more abnormal signs of his sexuality. At the age of eight, he was looking after a neighbour's young baby by wheeling it in a pushchair. Excuse me. He took the young baby girl into his house, and he later told Ray Wire, a sex crime expert who interviewed him, that I took her home and looked at her privates. And also around this time, when he attended Highland dancing classes, young Robert Black seemed more interested in lying on the floor, looking up the skirts of his young female classmates, rather than learning the dance. Also around about that time, he started to experiment in self-abuse, and he'd use various items to shove into his back passage. And it was a strange obsession, fixation that stayed with him. Eventually, Margaret Tulip died, and Robert Black went into a children's home. And the abuse against girls continued. And he was seen one night with a six-year-old girl in the children's home. And very soon afterwards, he was sent away to another one. And it was whilst he was in the second one, which was an all-boys one, that he actually suffered abuse at the hands of one of the carers in the home. And this clearly didn't help Robert in his already perverse ways. In 1963, the first real dreadful crime that Black committed occurred when he was age 16. There was a group of children playing on the swings, and he waited until all the other children had left, until one little girl was left on the swings. He approached her and told her he knew where there were some kittens, and he took her to the air raid shelter, and within the air raid shelter he sexually abused the little girl, and whilst he was doing it he throttled her into unconsciousness whilst pleasuring himself. When he left that air raid shelter, he neither knew or cared whether the little girl was alive or dead. Such was the behaviour of him at the time. However, the Scottish authorities looked on it as a case that probably would not be repeated, and basically he was admonished rather than receiving any custodial sentence. That clearly was an attempted murder and not picked up at the time. So that's so far.
The background that he came from meant trouble right from the word go, from the moment he was born, didn't he?
Yes, yeah. He's one of those unusual characters. I believe he was born to kill. The word is bandied around quite often, but there are very few who are actually there from the start. And he fits the same as, in my opinion, Peter Sutcliffe, both born to kill.
And his foster father, Jack Tulip, he passed away when Robert was only five, and that made it even worse for him, didn't it?
Yes, I mean, he didn't really have a chance as a child growing up, but also there was already this perverse instinct inside him, which was totally unusual, and particularly when you're talking about just after the Second World War, when life for the rest of us was very innocent.
Well, that's right. And he went on to, when he was working, he moved to London, didn't he?
Yes, but before moving to London, he actually spent a year in Borstal because he fiddled a six-year-old daughter of a family who befriended him in Kinlochleven. And in March 1967, he was sentenced to 1 year, and in March 68, he came out. And then round about August that year, he moved down to London, where he had quite quickly three different bedsits. But this was well before the poster to delivery van job, which gave him the opportunity to murder and abduct. But it was quite clear before moving from Scotland he had quite an extensive driving record, although no driving licence, with both the Glasgow Evening Times and John Menzies Group.
Right, so he was employed by them as a driver and had no driving licence.
The inference is he had a stolen one, because in those days, as you probably remember, Ron, they were cardboard fold-over type.
Yes.
There was nothing really apart from just a sticky piece of paper onto a cardboard.
Yeah, that's right. And but he went on to, I mean, he must have murdered a lot of children during his work when he was driving around the country for different companies.
Yes, but prior to that, I mean, it's quite clear to me that he murdered April Fabb in 1969. Jean, my wife, she was nearly abducted by him in May 1971. I was told by another woman who joined Greater Manchester Police, she was nearly abducted by him on a hillside in Cumbria, 1972. Little Christine Markham disappeared from Scunthorpe in 1973. Then moving on from that, in 1976, a girl who lived in Norfolk was nearly abducted by him from outside a public house. And then there's this series of abductions and murders which occurred after that. Mary Boyle in Cashelard, Ireland in 1977. Jeanette Tate in Aylesbury, Devon in 1978. Suzanne Lawrence from Highbury in London in July, August 1979. Then the first of a spate of murders was Jennifer Cardy from Northern Ireland in 1981, Susan Maxwell from the Borders in 1982, Caroline Hogg from Edinburgh in 1983, and Sarah Harper from Morley, Leeds in 1986.
That's right, and so it's been a catalogue of murders right through his life. And he actually passed away in prison in Northern Ireland three years ago.
Yes, it's quite uncanny. On the very day that Robert, my co-author, posted off our manuscript on the eventual book, the 12th of January 2016, when he got home, he found on the news that Robert Black had actually died the same day.
Right, well, that's rather strange. We'll come back to that story next week. I know that you've got a lot more to tell us about that, and very, very interesting, Chris, as well. But we'll do that next week. Now, if anyone's got any information about any murders that have happened in the past, and they can contact you via your website, can't you?
Yes, the website is www.armchairdetective.org.uk, and it's the way that I've actually had several contacts, both for Robert Black near misses and Peter Sutcliffe near misses, since the publication of both of those books. I'd just like to mention that the proceeds from both the books, the advances and royalties, they both go towards SOSAD, Supporters of Stray and Abandoned Dogs, at DNS Kennels in Durham.
Yes, and Simon from that charity is coming on next at 10:30 to talk about the charity, so stay tuned for that one.
Thank you very much, Rob.
Okay, then. Chris, anything further you want to add this morning before you disappear?
No, just that I've got seven further books I'm writing up, so I'm still keeping busy.
Right, okay then. So once again, your contact details for anyone who needs to contact you for whatever reason.
www.armchairdetective.org.uk.
Okay then, Chris. Well, thanks very much for coming on this morning, and we'll speak to you next week at the same time.
And thanks for the time. Thanks, Ron.
And we've got our next caller on the line now, and it's Simon Donnelly. And good morning, Simon.
Good morning, Ron and Ian.
Morning. Now, you're at DNS Kennels in Durham. Just tell our listeners why you're there.
Yes, we're a very wet DNS Kennels Rescue Centre. And this centre at Langley Moor near Durham is where our charity is based. And we're a small charity, Supports of Stray and Abandoned Dogs, that longer name that we shortened it to SOSAD. And our aim, our mission statement, is to raise funds for all the stray and abandoned dogs that come into the DNS Kennels Rescue Centre. That's either through the Darlington Dog Warden or via people bringing their dogs in for adoption. Perhaps their circumstances have changed, they've moved into sheltered accommodation where they can no longer have a dog, or they have health problems themselves where they can no longer care for a dog, and then for a small fee they can be put up for adoption here. Now the vet fees for the dogs alone can cost up to around £2,000 a month, and then there's all the other attendant costs of heating, of feeding and all of those things. So as you can imagine, the vet fees can cost £2,000 a month and all those other costs. It's a vital job that all of our dedicated volunteers and our charity, our small charity with a big heart, it's such an important job because it's a lot of money to raise.
Well, it certainly is, and it's all for a good cause. Now, there's a non-destruction policy at those kennels.
Well, we're so happy that the support that we give, support to stray and abandoned dogs to the rescue centre, means that however long those dogs that come in, either through the dog warden or given up for adoption, however long their stay may be, they're welcome here until they find that forever home. It means that a healthy dog will never be put to sleep, so that we hope that they'll be rehomed within a week, a month, sometimes a little bit longer, but in some cases it takes even longer to rehome them. But they've got a welcome home here until they find that really lovely forever home in the future. So, yeah, it's something we're all very proud of, all of the volunteers.
And if anyone comes down looking for a dog, you've got to make sure that it is going to go to a good home, don't you?
Oh, yes, there's Linda and Kevin Forsyth, who've been in the animal welfare business for, over 30 years, I think, now. They have a wealth of experience in their team. And there's a questionnaire that's completed so that it makes sure that people realise what a responsibility it is for them to look after these dogs who may live, hopefully, for a long and happy life, up to around 10 or 15 years. So it is a big responsibility, but it's also a lovely responsibility. I have Paddy, who was supposed to be a long-term, a fortnight foster back in 2009, and he's still with me. So he's great, he's absolutely fantastic. It's really nice when they find the forever homes. And we've got an event coming up at Wet Noses, sponsored dog walk and dog show on Sunday the 5th of May, next Sunday. And it's lovely to see all of the rescue dogs coming back, and regular contributors like Chris Clark and Gina are coming along with Darted Air Dog, and also their strainer abandoned dog that they adopted, Scooby. So it's going to be a great time next Sunday.
Now, if people want to help in any way, there are several ways of doing that, aren't there? Just tell us what they are.
Well, there's various different ways. If you want to get in touch with the rescue centre directly, perhaps they're interested in the dog, or they want to find out a little bit more about the volunteer dog walking scheme and Tom, the volunteer dog walking coordinator, they can contact the rescue centre directly on 0191 378 0439. We also have our Facebook page, which is Supports Stray and Abandoned Dogs, so sad. And that has details of all the events, including the Wet Noses sponsored dog walk and dog show, and all of the other things that will be going on that day, which includes dancing dogs, the actual walk being filmed by drone by our amazing volunteer Jeff Prodero and his companies, Durham Drones and We Are Pets, his photographer business, which is brilliant. And then there's going to be lots and lots of other things, a barbecue and that sort of thing. And we also have our website, www.sosad.co.uk. Great thing about that is it links you through to the details of all of the dogs looking for forever homes, and there's lots of lovely dogs, and not as good as Paddy, of course, because he's my favourite. And also there's a link to the donate button, where it takes you through to virginmoneygiving.com, so you can set up a fundraising activity for, say, Wet Noses Day, that you can raise money through that, and it makes it really easy, and they sort out the gift aid and all of that. Or you can make an individual donation. Whilst I'm talking about donations, I hope things are going well with you. Your GoFundMe page for Chapman Spin Radio. Such a vital role that you play in making people aware of animal welfare issues, like with Dodge Your Dog and Karen. You know, I mean, it's amazing what information can be gotten out there, and awareness raising of activities that we do and others in this sector.
Well, that's right. Yes, our fundraising, if people want to donate to it, they can do it through our website or through the Facebook page either. And the website is chatandspinradio.com, and there's a donate button on there, and people it'll take to the correct page, and any money that's donated will be gratefully received. And Simon, thank you for your donation as well.
Well, hopefully there'll be another one coming quite soon. I must get another one on there with a different picture of Paddy and keep you updated on how he's doing, because he's a funny onion, but he's my little monkey.
Well, he's a good laugh. He certainly is. Right, and is there anything further you want to add before you disappear back to the dogs?
That's it. Well, basically, if I can just remind people about our Wet Noses sponsored dog walk next Sunday, registration at 12. We're set off about 12:30. And then it's a dog show afterwards with Margaret Hunt and her team and the Dancing Dogs. I mean, it's going to be a brilliant day. And hopefully I'll be able to update you on the radio after the event and tell you how well it went. And with publicity that you've been given, it's gone from strength to strength, as our Facebook page reflects.
Okay then, Simon, well, thanks very much for coming on, and the best of luck with the charity as well.
Thanks again, Ron and Ian.